The Bloody Podcassacre with Zach Walters and Kennedy Catherine.
Hi.
Hello. You know what's crazy?
What?
So I was thinking about this the other day, is what turned into an original 4-day in between our last episode and this re-recording, it turned into 4 weeks.
I just, girl boss too close to the sun.
Yeah.
I got COVID in another country and I was gone for...
You were supposed to be gone for like two, three?
Two.
And then you were gone for a month.
Yeah. And then I said, you know what? See you never.
We always were like, you know what? Kennedy one day is just going to disappear. No one will know. And I thought that might be it.
It really didn't help my case that everyone thinks I'm going to go missing at all times. That I was like, by the way, I have COVID and I'm not coming back when I originally said. I'm sure everyone was very suspicious.
Yeah, I kind of just went with the flow. And then I just kept texting you and never heard one thing back.
In my defense, I was actually very sick.
That's fair. Did you, like, were you a symptomatic person or were you just like, maybe I'll test myself and then you got sick?
No, I was symptomatic.
Oh, okay. Do you know where you got it from?
We don't.
Yeah. So you got COVID.
I did.
And during that time, I started a new job.
You did?
I quit my job within 3 days of doing an interview and started a new job. And sure it is going great.
I'm so excited
for you. It is so nice. I have so much, like, autonomy in my job.
That's really nice.
I do feel like, am I stupid a lot? Because I'm still in that, like, weird learning phase.
Where everything is a challenge and everything feels impossible.
Yeah. Yep. So, I'm in that, but I'm the only one at work tomorrow. So, I'm going to roll in. I have two new monitors. They're both 27 inches. I'm going to watch a movie. If my bosses are listening, no, I'm not.
You're going to get a Starbucks.
Ugh. And I start an hour later than my old job.
That has got to
be. It is so nice.
Have you adjusted your sleeping schedule or are you just giving yourself extra time in the morning?
I give myself extra time in the morning because I like to go get a coffee now because I got a pay raise.
Yeah, you did.
An extra $3 an hour.
That's amazing.
So much more than I was expecting. So glad you're here.
Thank you.
Men.
It's a movie.
We've seen it a while ago now, because originally we saw this pre-Kennedy COVID trip.
We recorded pre-Kennedy COVID trip, and on my trip, when I went to go edit the audio, it was not usable. Mm-hmm. Having to record a second time always feels slightly less painful.
Yeah.
You're like, I already know what I think and feel.
True, and I feel like I can articulate a little bit better. And I feel also now that we watched it pretty recently when it came out to theaters, and so there wasn't a lot of, like, talk other than, like, critics.
I think we watched it within the first 2 days of it being out, and so there really wasn't a lot to hear from people at that time.
I want to say A24 did a screening room.
Did they?
So it is online for people to watch. It's out there.
Yeah.
So it is more readily available than going to a movie theater. So I have seen some more, like, tweets here and there because it's accessible now. Still, like, the same kind of conversation. Nothing new that I've seen that's been, like,
I haven't seen anything really groundbreaking in terms of anybody's thoughts or opinions about it either. The only thing that I have found surprising is I know a couple of, like, very diehard A24 fans, and I haven't heard from anybody personally who has watched this.
Interesting.
You have, though.
I've heard from a couple of people. One of my friends, another Jenna, who's getting married this weekend. So exciting for her.
Congrats, Jenna.
She told me to go watch it because she went with her fiance. And so then I was like, okay, we should go watch it. She was like, the last however long many minutes is
a wild ride.
So I was like, okay, we'll plan to go see it. So we did. And then I had one other friend and he was like, I couldn't do it. It was too much body horror. It is a lot towards the end.
Maybe it's just that we host a horror podcast. So, like, I'm used to a significant amount of gore. I did not find this to be any more horrific than a lot of movies. The only difference is there is, spoiler alert, this whole birth and rebirth scene at the end that does get, I mean, fairly gory, except for me, it felt very, like, art housey. It didn't feel, like, horrific to me.
I feel like there was a lot of new ways that we haven't seen body horror in, especially, like, you know, with the arm, that was very new. The birthing was very new, even though, like, birthing in horror movies is not something new, but the way that they did it was, you know, pretty different. I also didn't find it, like, extremely gory. We were very shocked. We were gasping in that theater, though.
We were clutching each other.
And we went to the theater, and it was one of those smaller section theaters, so it wasn't like for a big release where they have 200 plus seats. Mm-hmm. So we were there. There's probably like, what, 50, 60 seats maybe? Mm-hmm. And there was like us in the very back, and we ended up sitting a seat apart from each other to put stuff in the middle. Mm-hmm. We literally were both sitting in the same chair, it felt like, at one point.
Oh, yeah.
We were like holding each other's hands in the middle of the air because mm-hmm. we were in love with it. I think that this is one of those movies, and when we first originally talked about it, I was like still thinking about it and processing it.
Me too.
I love this movie.
Uh-huh.
It is so good.
I have so many different feelings about it. I do love it. I really like it. Mm-hmm. It stuck with me like a motherfucker. I really, really want to watch it again. But it reminds me, if anybody is trying to get a vibe check, it reminded me a lot of how I felt about Mother when I saw Mother right. in theaters. There are a lot of moments of just like really intense and prolonged anxiety-inducing moments. Mm-hmm. That can feel really bad. And when you walk away, you're like, I just didn't like that feeling. I don't want to think about that. I don't want to feel that. And then as I was removed from it and I thought about it more and I was watching and reading more about it, that's when I was like, I have an appreciation for this. And mm-hmm. that appreciation turned into like.
Yeah. No, that is a great way of putting it. Mm-hmm. And it's also one of those movies where it's like you have to like sit on it for a bit. You don't just leave the theater and you're like, I understood everything, which is fine. You don't have to understand everything as soon as the film is over.
Right.
Because also that's fun filmmaking, being able to like think about it and have those conversations.
Right.
Afterwards to be like, okay, so was this thing or was this that?
Mm-hmm. And this movie, to everybody's credit in like trying to learn about it, is an amalgamation of so many different things.
Right.
It's social themes, it's folklore, it's gore, it's so many different things that you're trying to piece together. Mm-hmm. And almost like Mother, where there is just standardly horrifying things about like life and love, there is also extremely biblical themes that don't all necessarily tie in together. And that's what Men is like. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, I'm putting together all the pieces, but it's not fitting like a puzzle, I don't think it really is like a linear puzzle.
Before we get into the plot, I saw a little news thing today.
Okay.
So we've talked about it before, but not on the podcast. Terrifier 2 is being released in October. I'm pretty excited for it. I really liked the first one.
Still haven't seen it.
Apparently, it's going to be in theaters, and it's going to be a Screambox exclusive.
Oh.
When you were in the States, I should have texted you to try Screambox.
You should have.
I just remembered now.
Shit.
Also, while you were gone, Black Phone came out.
Yes. It's doing really well.
It's doing so good. I went and looked on Rotten Tomatoes, and it has 83% and 7.3 on IMDb.
Oh, we should go see it soon.
I've heard it's really, really good. I haven't had any personal friends go and see it yet, but like everything I've seen online so far has been like good reviews.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to jump into the plot now?
I would love to.
Our main character, Harper, decides to spend a holiday alone in the small village of Cotson following the apparent suicide of her husband, James. In flashbacks, it is revealed that Harper had intended to divorce James, leading him to threaten her with his suicide and eventually hitting her when she held her ground. Harper locks James out of their flat, then watches him fall from an upstairs balcony to his death, partially impaled by a fence. Sometime later, Harper arrives at the house that she's renting, where she's met by its owner, Jeffrey. Harper goes for a walk in the woods and stumbles upon an old, unused railroad tunnel. A mysterious figure appears at the opposite end and begins running toward her. She turns and runs. Reaching an open field with seemingly no one behind her, she takes a picture with her phone, inadvertently capturing a naked man standing near an abandoned building. Later, as Harper is video chatting with her friend Riley, she observes the naked man in her garden, having followed her from the tunnel. She calls the police, and he is arrested. Harper goes to a church where she's met by a young boy and a vicar who both bear a likeness to Jeffrey, and the latter tries to justify James hitting her, asking what she must have done to drive him to it. At a pub, one of the policemen, who also looks like Jeffrey, informs Harper that the naked man was released as they had no legal grounds to keep him. Harper tells Riley about this, and she agrees to come in the morning, but as she attempts to send her the address, her service repeatedly drops. She sees the policeman in her yard, but as her lights flicker, the figure becomes the young boy, who chases her. Inside the house, a window breaks in the kitchen. Jeffrey arrives and finds that the window breaking was due to a crow whose neck he breaks to put him out of his injured misery. As Jeffrey goes into the yard, he is replaced with the naked man, who chases her again. When he tries to reach her through the mail slot, Harper stabs him through the arm. But he manages to pull his arm free, the stuck knife ripping his arm into two. Both the boy and the vicar appear in the house, each of them now similarly injured. The vicar attempts to rape Harper, but she stabs him in the stomach and leaves the house. While attempting to drive away, she runs over Jeffrey, who gets the upper hand and takes the car after pulling her outside. He chases Harper down before crashing the car into a stone wall in front of the house. The naked man then approaches her, his ankle now severely broken, and he gives birth to the young boy, who in turn gives birth to the vicar, and then Jeffrey, and finally James. James and Harper sit on a couch inside. She asks him what he wants with her. He responds that he wants her love, which she appears to refuse. Later, Riley arrives and follows a blood trail to find Harper in the yard, smiling. And that is the end of Men.
Wow.
Wow is right. Where do we even want to start? So this movie is sort of, it's varied opinions. Critically, I'm not entirely sure. Not great.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of, when I was reading them originally, it was not a lot of great reviews.
Audience reviews are also not good.
I think a lot of people wanted either, with the title Men, mm-hmm. for those ideas to be pushed a little further.
Yeah.
It just didn't live up to its name. Mm-hmm. Is where I think a lot of people are finding like the fault in it. Mm-hmm. And I think also a lot of people have high expectations of this being an Alex Garland film.
Yeah.
Because he also did previously Ex Machina, which is fantastic. Love that movie. And he also did Annihilation. I remember when we left the theater, like, I could be like, oh, I can see where, like, Annihilation has similar tones. Mm-hmm. Especially with, like, the characters and the way that they, like, act. The way that people react to certain situations. Mm-hmm. Very, like, similar style with Alex Garland. Which I really liked. People have those expectations of it being also this high level, I don't know, out of this world kind of thing.
But is it not?
I mean, it is. And I think a lot of people also just, like, don't want to, like, do the research into that.
I just think that people don't want to think that hard sometimes. And that's fine. At that point, you have to discern what is objectively not a good movie and what is just me not appreciating what this movie is. Mm-hmm. Because those are two different things. I don't like Disney movies. I don't like animation. I don't find it interesting. But I also can acknowledge that it's an incredible talent and skill and that that's a whole other audience that it's made for. And so it doesn't fucking matter how I feel.
End of podcast.
You know what? Preach. I think the thing that was confusing for sure is the title. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting that, like, Alex Garland has talked about what this movie actually means. People have drawn a lot of comparisons to the Me Too movement and saying, is this a response to that? And he has said no, that he had been working on this movie for 10 to 15 years. But I do think that if this movie came out 10, 15 years ago, it would have been a lot more revolutionary. But yeah. Right now, it's just kind of fitting into this whole genre that's being created about gender dynamics.
I don't know if we mentioned this. The person who plays Jeffrey. Why do I say Joffrey every
time? I have no idea.
I don't know. The person who plays Jeffrey and the person who plays all of the men mm-hmm. are played by the same actor. And one thing that I saw, I was looking through Reddit earlier because I was like, maybe someone else put something new. Mm-hmm. Someone posed a question of how men viewed this movie.
Oof, I've read some things and it is startling.
Yes, but they put that they saw the movie as how a man can be easily antagonistic, creepy, manipulative, and aggressive, as well as sometimes how after a traumatic experience, women can see all men as the same.
Oh, that's a good point.
And I was like, you know what? That is such a good, like, connection, because it doesn't make sense as to why they all look the same.
No, it doesn't.
But in that kind of, like, scenario.
Yeah, where she's been in a relationship that I think we're supposed to infer had some level of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. He did hit her. We just don't really know to what extent that existed throughout their relationship. And so if it's like supposed to be this commentary on men are always going to be some version of this to you, that would make way more sense than anything else I've seen or hypothesized.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think it's like one of those, it's a movie where it's like black and white, where it's like men are bad, women good. Like, because no. That's not what it's trying to be either. But I do feel like with the traumatic experience, Harper has some sort of connection that she feels maybe she caused her husband's suicide, or where she feels blame because he was very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Manipulative.
Essentially, he said he was going to kill himself if she went through with the divorce. And so she probably feels
horrible.
Yeah. And probably why all these men look the same and eventually end up being her husband with the same injuries that he had.
As the men are all birthed, they all have the same injuries is what Zach is saying.
They have the injury of the arm.
Yep.
Which she caused. And then even she runs over Jeffrey's ankle.
But all of these things amount to the very end version of the man, mm-hmm. which is her husband. And those injuries are actually the injuries he sustained when he was impaled on the fence when he committed suicide at the very beginning of the movie.
Yes. Which, when they showed that scene, they stuck that camera there for way too long.
No holds barred. We saw everything.
And they did a little zoom in here on the hand and then on the ankle. And I was like, wow.
Right.
It's an A24 horror movie. They're going to throw it in.
Just really quick to like the point about Harper, the female character played by...
Jesse Buckley, yep.
Yep. I've seen a lot of... man, okay. You know when you think one thing, you're like, but also, here's seven things for groundwork. I've read and listened to a lot of reviews about this movie, and the vast majority of reviews as a whole are given by men. And there is one sort of single unifying thing that I've heard. It's not even necessarily an opinion, but it is a defensiveness. Is this idea that men seem to think that these stories can only be told and written by women, and then they're defensive about that. Almost every male reviewer that I read was like, so am I even allowed to have an opinion on this movie? It's like, oh my God. What about this movie is telling you that you're not allowed to have an opinion? That is your defensiveness about what you think the movie stands for. Mm-hmm. When somebody gets so fucking defensive about gender dynamics and male privilege or white privilege, you just show your hand. Mm-hmm. You show that you don't really understand. One that I read did a good sort of comparison to Fresh. Oh God, what was the other one? There was a few very recent movies that sort of...
Was it X?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. It was, actually. How, you know, these Fresh and then... No, it wasn't X. It was Fresh and something else that was written and directed by women. And they were saying, you know, like, if you're going to tell these stories, then they should be written and directed by women, like... What's his actual place in this? It's like, you're allowed to talk about the ways that you affect society. We're not even necessarily asking you to be self-aware. Mm-hmm. Someone might ask you to answer to that, but no one's telling you you can't fucking do it.
There was a really good review by this woman. Essentially, the only thing that she really didn't find push the story forward in a sense of making men this more villainous is that they had to have... women's genitalia for the end. Why did they have to birth themselves over and over again? And I wish I could find that article because she had a really good line in it. Why didn't I save it? Someone said, also, I'm just trying to find it, but I can't. But someone said, Jesse Buckley's character felt like a horror movie character who makes smart decisions, which makes the film unique.
Yeah.
Which is true because it's not like she's, you know, being this character where she's like, oh, I don't know how to do anything. I don't know how to, like, fend for myself.
Yes, this was my original point before I went on the tangent about the male reviewers. I've seen so many different interpretations of her character, and people are either like, okay, this actually feels real, which as a woman particularly is true. It does feel real. Other people have said that she feels weak. I think that that's such bullshit, and I think that there is this way that we have these strict binaries in film as a whole, that, like, we're most comfortable if people are written as a form of stereotype that we can, like, easily identify. Mm-hmm. And so for women in horror, we often have final girls or we have victims. Mm-hmm. And she isn't either one of those things. She's just, like, a regular person because this story doesn't really fall into a category of needing her to be anything. And so when people say, oh, well, she's weak because she doesn't immediately rush to self-defense, she doesn't immediately try to kill any of these characters who are invading her home or her rental home or her space. It's like, is that most people's first instinct?
Is to kill somebody?
No. I don't think it is.
And, like, she also does do things in which she's protecting herself. She calls the police, tells her friend, hey, maybe you should come up. I'm not as comfortable out here alone as I thought I would be. Come hang out. Yeah, there's no reason for her to be pitted as this bad character because she's a great character. And also Jesse Buckley does a great job in this movie.
I love her.
Me too. It makes me want to rewatch. I'm blanking on the movie title. I have the book as well.
I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Yeah. Even though that book, fantastic. hated the ending of the movie. They really ruined it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The book is amazing. Anyways.
Can I just say, I know I said this the first time, but it is shocking to me. And this is not a commentary on her looking poorly. She's 3 years older than me. Is that not shocking?
I thought she was in her 40s.
So did I. I didn't know she was in her 40s. I certainly thought she was in her later 30s to 40s. Let me just fact check myself really quick, but I'm certain I'm not wrong. 4 years. 4 years older than me.
But still, that's not much.
Nope. I know.
Anyways, I've seen her in this movie. I'm thinking of Any Things. And then this one movie, I think called Jessie. And she was a country singer.
What?
I know. Just like, I think in the movie, I don't really remember it that well. So she like moves from Europe to the Americas to further her country singing career.
Right.
It was a fine movie. Do I remember any of that one? No.
No. Do we want to talk about what we initially thought this movie was about and then what it probably is actually about?
Yeah.
When we first started it, my initial feeling was it just like really reminded me of Mother, specifically the part of Mother where the house keeps filling. Mm-hmm. When you think that we have reached a boundary, somehow they push it until the house is quite literally collapsing in on itself. I had that feeling toward the end where I was like, I'm going to have a fucking panic attack. Then as the end arrived, I was just confused. Okay, yes. This is a social commentary about gender dynamics. The men in these circumstances, so her husband, and then the men of Kotsin, they've gaslit her, they've shamed her, they've made her feel immense guilt for herself and for their behavior. And then in the end, they all regenerate into the same beings over and over as a sort of way of saying, like, the cycle of toxic patriarchal conditioning, I guess, never really ends. But I also knew that something larger was at play with biblical themes because we had all those sort of thematic images and this representation of nature. I just didn't know exactly what that meant. And it's one of those movies, just like Midsommar, where Alex Garland is slightly withholding about certain things. Here is one of his quotes. So he said, "Many, many times I've encountered people who say, this film is clearly this. And what they really mean is, it's clearly this to me. And that ends up being more about them as much as it is about the film. It is about their response to it. It's about their life history. It's about their concerns about the world and their interaction with it." And then at a Q&A after the New York City premiere, he told the audience, "It's not just shit happening. I've got a rationale, but it doesn't seem terribly important."
Which I kind of like. You let art speak for itself and you let people find what they want to find. And that's like, even with Mother, we will never know what that yellow liquid is. I'm at peace with it. And like, that's where I feel also the dandelions in this movie with the green man.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever know what that is about. I feel like I had the same kind of thought process watching the movie. Although I didn't clue in until the husband was sitting on the couch that the injuries were related to his. I was like, oh my God, Kennedy, look, it's the... And you were like, yeah, Zach, we figured that out like 7 hours ago. I was like, oh, yes. And normally, like, I clue into those things. And I don't know. I was just so like...
There was... Okay, listen. I was watching a review of these two guys who were talking about it. The one guy literally did not realize until he read a review afterward that it was all the same man. It's like... What do you mean? And he was like, I just don't think that a lot of people are going to catch on to that. And the other reviewer was like, I don't know how to tell you this.
It's literally the same.
That's a you problem. Yeah.
There was, I think at the beginning, I was like, because the naked man doesn't fully, we don't see a full shot of him.
Yes.
And it's when you get to the policeman and you're like, something's a little weird here. They could be the same. But then when you're in that bar, when she goes into the bar after and everybody's in there, you're like, I'm looking at you.
Like, it's very evident when you see the shitty CGI face on the kid that you're like, wait, what's happening here? And that happens pretty immediately.
And I wonder also still if that is
intentional or not.
Intentional, because that just felt so out of place.
We've gone around and round about this in conversation. And the answer that I've ultimately landed on is that even if they integrated the face more easily into the shape of that kid's head, there is no way that it will not look unnatural for an adult face to be on a small child.
Yeah, you're right.
He also, Alex Garland, asked a question that I hadn't really considered. And he said, does Harper see all men as the same even though they're not? Or does she not realize that, in fact, they are all the same? Those are wildly different interpretations, and the question is in no way answered by the film. You could watch the movie and say, it's just a ghost story. This young woman is bereaved and goes to the countryside and gets essentially haunted by either the memory or the manifestation of her dead husband's sadness and anger. It should just be able to function like that if that's what people want it to be.
Well, that's like another question. I think I asked you this the first time. It didn't happen in her head.
Yes. Okay. That's a good thing to just to point out that we have like explicit evidence by the end that the actual events that took place did happen.
Because the friend shows up. Mm-hmm. And so she had that conversation with the friend. There is the blood on her cheek. And so like, I'm assuming that she's going to have a conversation with a friend. The friend's not going to show up and be like, what's going on? These things did happen. Mm-hmm. Whether it was all these weird alien men thing or something in the city.
That's the other thing we don't really ever understand is like, is it the town? Is it her? Mm-hmm. There is another woman that we see in the town who does not look like the men.
Another thing that we talked about last time, which I think, I don't remember where we got to, but maybe our answer will change, is when the events of the movie started for her. Mm. Does it start when she first arrives in the village and meets Jeffrey? Is it when she's whistling the tunnel and that green man wakes up? Mm. Is it that the spirit existed in the village the whole time?
That's a good question. I don't actually know.
Yeah, I feel like I want to say it's always been there.
I mean, if the green man has always been there, then theoretically, it has always been there.
Her arrival is what sparks it. All of those people, all of those events were always there. Mm-hmm. So one thing that we talked about earlier was kind of with the folklore and religious aspects that came along with this movie. That's one of those things that you kind of have to, unless you like study British paganology, you won't know.
Yeah.
So it seems someone on Reddit, which I found, posted by Roasted Oolong.
Hell yeah.
Kind of did a deep dive on British Isle pagan roots following this green man and Sheila Nagig. Mm-hmm. Had trouble saying that last time. So we have this green man in the movie, which is kind of sparked from this tunnel where she's singing, whistling, starts to follow her, and is the naked man who ends up literally being full of leaves at one point. He
is sticking branches into his head and stuff, and then they start to grow out of him.
Yeah, and like has leaves, it looks like, stapled onto his forehead at one point. And then he blows dandelions on her. Mm-hmm. Still don't understand that. Some people talked about that being like kind of like a healing, because the dandelions appeared at the end of the credits, remember?
Oh, yeah.
In the movie, we see the green man, and then we also see this face on a lot of the stones in the church, mm-hmm. which is kind of like the other half of the green man, which is Sheila Nagig. This naked woman with an exaggerated vulva, architectural, grotesque thing in a lot of Europe. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be used for warding off demons, evil, death. On the opposite hand, the green man was supposed to be rebirth, recycle, regrowth, spring kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I almost wonder if they tried to take those two ideas where they have this green man who is this like rebirth where we have those rebirth constantly being the same thing. Mm-hmm. But then we have Sheila Nagig with the vulva trying to ward off evil.
Something that's interesting about that is like when you talk about how this movie can like in a thematic sense feel almost like a patchwork blanket that's kind of put together from different mm-hmm. pieces. I have to wonder like when the addition of that actually happened, because in the original scripts and as they started to develop the movie, the birthing scene wasn't in the original story. They were supposed to be mutations of sort, and it's not explicitly clear what that means, but from a visual standpoint, they didn't feel it was strong enough. So it sounds like that is actually more of a visual mm-hmm. choice than it was a thematic choice or a plot-driven choice. But then
we have all this imagery put in the beginning of the movie.
And the green man is like kind of integral to the story. So like, when did that all come together?
The thing is also, a lot of it can be put in after. So even with like the birth, if they thought those mutation creatures weren't enough and they changed it to this birthing scene, they could add those leaves and everything in the later shots onto the green man and create this person other than just some weird naked man who lives under a bridge.
Well, I mean, I don't think that the weird naked man exists outside of the Green Man. Like, they didn't shoot the movie and then make that choice. But I just am like, at what point did the story become what it was? What was it originally? I guess I'm asking the question, like, chicken or the egg? Like, what came first?
Right.
Did the need to add a foundation to the birthing scene come first? Or was the folklore always there in some way and it happened to lend well to this visual? Mm-hmm. And so then they incorporated that in.
I don't know. Let me just DM Alex Garland quickly.
Yeah. Get on him.
A lot of people kind of just end up saying that all of these figures, and including the dandelions, are a representation of healing and getting rid of, like, unwarranted guilt.
Mm-hmm. The entire cast is two people. So I have what Jesse Buckley and Rory Kinnear think about the interpretations or their own interpretations. And he sort of said something a little bit similar where he said the film could be a quote-unquote therapy session and that it's not an allegory about toxic masculinity. It's just a story about emotional trauma. So he said, you can project out of Harper's story something about contemporary society and traditional gender roles throughout history, but you can also see that this is a story of a woman who suffered a traumatic event and how she processes that trauma and how that trauma keeps on raising its head, albeit in different guises. For me, that's how I found the story most affecting. So that's more about, this is just like a manifestation of her trauma.
One thing that I liked about Rory also was that he made and plotted little biographies for every character and then took them to Alex.
Yeah.
Which is really fun because when you're playing 8+ characters, you have to have some sort of like groundwork.
For sure.
That you work through in order for you to like bring something other than just like a flatline character for every single one.
Yeah.
Which if that was the note, then by all means, but...
But in order to bring like substance,
yeah,
you have to actually figure out who these people are.
I also found a note here about the dandelions, which I think I said last time, but somebody's interpretation said that the dandelion seeds is that a seed that spreads is all the same and that the puffs floating down root and grow in new places the same way that toxic masculinity gets spread away from its parents into a new generation that floats and lands and roots and etc. So
it feels a little, maybe
it feels reaching,
yeah,
but also we have no other answer for that.
This is true. Speaking of, you know, the toxic masculinity aspect of things, Jesse Buckley Harper, her interpretation was, I think of this film as a fairy tale or a fever dream. I see the dandelions personally as Kennedy being more of an aspect of the fever dream sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then she went on to say, you know, toxic masculinity and Me Too, of course they're in there, but for me, I'm more interested in the relationship that we have between each other as man and woman and asking why these kinds of things recur again and again throughout time. Where is the source of the wound? Which I think is a good question to summarize probably what the end of this movie is trying to depict, just recurring, and never really figuring out how to heal that wound.
That's a great way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great note to end on. Do you have anything else to say?
I kind of don't. No, that's it.
Complete, like, not, like, theorizing or anything, but just related to the movie that we didn't really talk about. The hand scene.
I loved it.
It is so grotesque and it is so prolonged.
It's so good.
Kennedy briefly mentioned it in the synopsis, but the naked man reaches in through the mailbox to try to get Jesse Buckley's character, Harper. And so he's reaching at her. She's locked the door. She has a knife. I don't know where she got it from.
The kitchen.
Okay, thank you. But did she have it the whole time? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Anyways, so she stabs the man. And he can't remove his arm because the blade has pierced all the way through the arm and now is stuck in the mailbox. So he slowly, and it is like a good 2 minutes, it feels like.
It does feel like that.
Of him pulling his arm, splitting it into two.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, when the priest, I don't remember his name.
The vicar.
Yeah. Is in the bathroom with her.
Yes.
And he takes his little dangly hand.
Oh my god, I forgot about this.
He takes his little dangly hand and wraps his split arm around her neck and is holding her. I wanted to die.
This whole time I've been trying to think about, like, what moment was it when we were, like, really clutching each other? And it was when he took his little lobster claw of a hand and wrapped it around her. No, I can't.
It was so gross because it was like, still slightly bleeding.
Yes.
And so it left this, like, weird arm mark. Ugh. Also, the bird neck snapping in the kitchen. Do you remember that? That was a lot. Because yeah. we also watched some other trailer with a bird hatch.
Oh, yeah.
I downloaded it for us to maybe watch it just for fun.
It came up as a preview on something I was watching recently, and I was like, who knew?
Yeah, so we watched a lot of bird necks that day getting snapped randomly.
You know what? All in all, I like this movie.
Yeah.
Do you want to rate it?
Yeah.
Scary.
Like 6.
It's hard because we don't really have a category for this. Like, we have...
Unsettling.
No, I guess unsettling is better. So, like, yeah, I'll go with 6. But for unsettling, it was a solid 8.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, an 8 or, like, a 9 maybe for yeah. some scenes.
It just really made me uncomfortable
yeah.
a lot.
And, like, psychologically, I was, like, thinking about it later, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I agree with that. Story?
Like a 6.5, 7.
I'm comfortable with a 7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we went through those so fast than normal.
Well, because we've done this already. Yeah. But also, I think part of the reason why this story is always hard to rate is that there's different merits for different things. And one thing that this movie doesn't have a lot of is it's not super dialogue heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not like a ton of dialogue driving the plot forward. The written story and the foundation is very good. So I'm like 7 or 8 mm-hmm. for me.
And I do feel like I like how they incorporated... The flashbacks,
mm-hmm.
those were good, of like telling us the past and the present.
Yes.
And differentiating between those. So, yeah, I'm sticking with my 7.
Cool. Was it a paper cut or was it a bloody massacre?
It's the slaying of men we didn't ask for, but definitely needed.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Precisely.
It's just a fun little summer flick. Just dudes being dudes.
Bros being bros.
You know?
Tuesdays for the boys. We will now be back on schedule. So sorry for the massive delay. I could do nothing about it. You can leave us a rating or a review on Spotify?
Yep.
Apple Podcasts and...
Kennedy.
We know what it is.
Then why aren't you saying it?
It's Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That's it.
Leave us an email.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I know that. Send us an email at thebloodypodcaster@gmail.com.
I thought you couldn't remember anything else.
No. Or follow us and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Podcastiker.
Okay.
Until next time.
What haunts you will find you.
Once again, not a good
great. I know.